Thank you, Chairperson. Since I will answer some of the questions, I'll request my team to assist as follows. The issue of the internal auditors, the CFO will respond to that. But Honorable Ngola, we learn always when we come to the Portfolio Committee, and it's due to your assistance always to have our own internal audit. I must proudly say that we have our own internal audit staff, the senior manager and the, I think, two or three auditors, but then CEO will confirm that. And then the issue of the mobile app, the CEO will expand more. But then what she was saying is that we did a market research. We were thinking that we will be able to appoint the service provider with the amount which we've budgeted. But then unfortunately, with the COVID challenges and everything, when we then advertised for the service providers, then the price escalated. Hence the challenge that we couldn't achieve this target in the financial year, the previous financial year. But then I must indicate that we then approached National Treasury for the deviation to increase on that, but a CEO will expand further. And then why reducing the plan targets? CEO will indicate, but then again, another reason, Honorable Ngola, is the issue of the funding. I mean, if we don't have the necessary funding, our budget is cut. And I think the history will also indicate that what was meant to be an ombudsman, which is later changed with the binding remedial action, but then it's based on that, but also it's based on making sure that whatever our targets we have are aligned to the money which we are having as an institution. The issue of irregular expenditure, Chairperson, the Bowman matter is not relating to the other attorney, which the CFO will deal with. But then this Bowman matter, I'll ask Advocate Fori, who's the chief, who's the executive manager, who was one of the acting legal services manager. I think that incident happened around 2015. 2014-15, that's one issue which we can just clarify finally what is all about. The issue of the mobile app, the CEO will indicate the stage and the status of the matter. The exit interview of the COO, the CEO will indicate on that. On the home affairs issue, Honorable Nivot Drachans, you know, Honorable member, the issue of home affairs, we've issued a report where we were guiding and indicating to home affairs. I mean, I worked there more than 5-6 years ago within the refugee environment, and I think that's where possibly you can see how you can coordinate with the home affairs portfolio committee, because a lot of those people, you'd find that already they've been processed, they are using an asylum permit or asylum visa, and they are waiting for the outcome of the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs to confirm the decision of the status determination officers, or they are waiting for their appeal where they were rejected and they can't qualify as refugees. So the unfortunate part about this country is that that permit is the permit which or visa any foreign national can come into the country, claim asylum, and then they are, once their asylum process is rejected, then there is the system is clogged at the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. There is a report we've issued, Honorable Nivot Drachans, which we can share with the committee. Unfortunately, again, the minister took us on review on that particular matter, and if they can implement that report, it will assist and the process of the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs and the appeal board, and then those matters will be resolved. So already there's a report, Honorable Member, on that particular aspect. So we have done our part as the Power Protector. Unfortunately, again, the minister has decided to take us on review on that particular matter, and we discussed, we explained the remedial action, what we intend to achieve, but then they decided to take the matter on review again. The same explains to honorable members why sometimes when we issue reports to change and improve and support constitutional democracy, and if our reports are not implemented, we will remain with that same status quo as a country. So on the issue of the Honorable Jelle, thank you for that. The issue of COO, it will be dealt with by the CEO. And then the issue of, I think maybe to say on the COO, yes, it's very critical. I remember Honorable Janji sometime was asking why fill that position when you have the Deputy Public Protector to assist. But then honorable members will appreciate that the Deputy Public Protector is also in an executive authority who cannot sign a performance agreement with the COO, which is signed by the CEO, but then can't be operational to that particular level. Hence, we need the COO to then oversee all the executive managers and to be able to fit into that. But then I think the CEO will indicate whether there was an exit interview which was conducted. And the reports which were not signed, CEO will indicate we couldn't achieve the 14 reports. Yes, it's an accumulative target. But then what happened was that there were a number of reports which were already ready for signature, but were still serving within the internal full bench. And they were supposed to be finalized by the 30th of September. Unfortunately, some of them were not ready from the various branches so that they can be signed, because we have an internal backlog project where we are dealing with all the matters which are more than the time frames allocated to them. The roadshows, indeed, Honorable Jelle, I think we will have to maybe then see whether we cannot include that in our operational plan as the private office, like in the public protector and the deputy public protector's schedule, so that we do that, unlike putting it in the strategic document, to avoid or as well to preempt in case we are back to square one, the country is locked down, or we have more challenges of disasters. So I think that one we will make sure that we do that, and we continue meeting the local communities. Skills development, DPP, please address this one, especially what we've done on the issues of SIU, the training, the FIC training, and our engagements with Justice, using Justice College. I think DPP will address that. And then the CEO will address the issue of the intent. Honorable Mangwanishe, the issue of the bailout, I think CEO and CFO can unpack that, why we always in the situation which we are facing. I think by giving the history, we were trying to preempt the question, but then they will deal with that. On the issue of drop boxes at magistrate's court, DPP will address that, but we also have the executive manager responsible for complaints and stakeholder management, Ms. Mutsitsi, who will also take us through that particular process. And then the PPSA Act, we will have to give the honorable members an update. We have Mr. Van der Merwe, who's responsible for our key knowledge management, who will just, in short, indicate at what stage we are in the amendment of the complaint. And then the security of the offices, the CEO and CFO will deal with that. Over to you. Maybe let's start with DPP and then CEO and then CFO, Advocate Fori, Ms. Mutsitsi, Ms. Van der Merwe. I think just in short, you can take the honorable members through.
Thank you very much, PT. I'm back.
The CEO, I said DPP can start, then yourself, then CFO, then
okay.
The
area.
Thank you, Pamela Puteka. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, and thank you for the opportunity, and to the honorable members. TP, if I may just also expand on the issue of the road shows, firstly, which was raised by Honorable Newhouse Drachen. We have actually been doing this during this crisis period. However, not in the traditional way in which we would be meeting with community members congregated in a certain area, but from our hospital road shows, we have been meeting the members of the public at the hospital areas where they are as patients, but also we also took up the higher education systemic investigations where we went around through the institutions where we also met students through their SRCs. So we have been doing that, but we have been trying to comply obviously with the COVID-19 requirements of ensuring that we do not have crowds around. And we also have other roadshows planned to engage, but of course in line with the COVID-19 requirements. In respect of the skills development, Chairperson, what we have done, we have requested intervention from the Department of Justice through the Justice College, where we've already submitted our training needs. And in doing so, we have also re-established our training committee as an institution, which is chaired by Advocate for Me, who is quite a senior member. And we have also engaged with the FIC, which has already done the training. It is also to be continuous. We have also engaged the SIU, which has also done the training. And we are also in the process of finalizing an MOU with the DPCI. We have already met with the head of the DPCI, Dr. Libia, to have a discussion in this respect. We are also in the process of negotiating an MOU with the National Prosecuting Authority, and which also entails training of staff. We have had several internal workshops as an institution where we have discussed gap areas within our investigations and so forth. So that is also a form of skills development. But through the file inspections that the PPNI embark on, we also use that as an opportunity to coach and mentor colleagues as we go along. But we also now in the process of ensuring that we actually institutionalize coaching and mentoring. And what we are in the process of doing now is to put a schedule of monthly training and workshops, which we would be doing in-house using our own resources on past experiences and on futuristic elements that we are picking up within the law, just to ensure that we institutionalize training and coaching and mentoring within the Public Protector South Africa, which would really help us a great deal in terms of skills development. We are also looking at establishing an e-library, which of course is dependent on our financial outlook, but we are trying to put that together. In respect of the drop boxes, Chairperson, we've already distributed 5 drop boxes per province and to all provinces throughout the country. CSM has indicated that there is a need for further drop boxes just to ensure that we are able to spread out in respect of accessibility. I thank you.
Leo, or maybe to add, DPP should have indicated that our engagement with the Department of Justice, we met with the minister, the deputy minister, their leadership as well. We are in the process of engaging and seeing what the training of our senior investigators at the Justice College, especially drafting and related training. So, but over to you, CEO, you can just add.
PP, just Honorable Neho Drachen has written a chat that her question regarding Home Affairs was whether we have received a complaint in this regard. Honorable Neho Drachen, we have not received a complaint specifically in this regard. However, the ones the report that the public protector has outlined, which was in respect of the refugees issue of the appeals committee not dealing with the matters timelessly, but in respect of the Western Cape matter, which you are referring to, we have not, Honourable Member. I thank you.
May I proceed, Kitty? Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. I will deal with a few questions that have been referred to me. The first one is the issue of the mobile referral app. PP has sort of touched on it, but I will give the details as well. The question was, why didn't we develop it in the previous financial year? As indicated earlier on, we did market research to inform our procurement plan, as well as the budget allocation. When that happened, the market indicated that it should cost us less than R500,000. Then we put it on our procurement plan, and then we allocated R500,000 for it because that's what we expected to pay, informed by the market research. However, when the actual procurement then started, then it transpired that the prices have gone up and we were unable to procure. And why we didn't approach the innovation hub at that stage? Unfortunately, in terms of the treasury, the procurement policies in the country, you cannot go directly to another organ of the state or anybody else. You have to go through the procurement process because the understanding is that everybody should participate. Unfortunately, organs of the state normally do not participate in procurement processes in government. So when we issue the tender, innovation hub and any other, your CSIRs didn't put up their tender. They didn't submit their bids. So therefore, we thought because it's an organ of the state, we can negotiate the price with them. That's why then we had to get approval from Treasury to deviate from the procurement process to be able to engage directly with the organ of the state. And we did that, and Treasury then gave approval for us. But as I said, unfortunately, the approval came late in the year. That's why we couldn't procure in the previous financial year. So currently the contract has been signed with Innovation Hub, and they are busy developing the app, and the testing and the piloting of the app will happen from January next year so that we are ready for full implementation by April in the next financial year. So the app will be developed by the end of this financial year, tested and piloted in a few provinces so that we are able to roll it out in full in the coming financial year. Then the other question was why we decreased the targets in our ATP. When you look at the previous targets and at the previous targets as per the previous ATP, I think that the targets were more output driven. And there's a need, there was a directive by DPSA that the targets should be outcome driven. So it's not about how many information sessions you've had, but it's now more about the impact of those information sessions on the people that you had information sessions with. So some of the targets were then consolidated to come up to an outcome, but some were achieved and others were downgraded to the operational plan because they were too operational. And I'll just make an example with one or two, where you say you have a number of awareness sessions within your institution to sensitize your own staff on customer service. That's an operational matter that we should be dealing with. So it cannot go to the APP, but it is on our operational plan and it is on somebody's performance agreement. So some of the targets that were dropped, it doesn't mean that we don't do them anymore. We do not perform those functions anymore. It's just that we drop them because they are not outcome driven, but they were more output driven. That's why they were downgraded then to the operational plan. But we still do pursue some of them. SDPP gave a detailed explanation of the training that we're doing with other organs of the state to make sure that we capacitate our people fully. And then there was an issue about the other question. SDPP responded to this one. The issue of the COO, why the COO left and whether there was any exit interview. Unfortunately, this is how it happened. I received a call on a Monday morning from the COO who informed me that he is resigning with immediate effect. So obviously my question was, Can you please give me the reasons? Can you please go back and reconsider? Take time off, probably a few days, to think about your decision, and then let's talk about your reasons. He said it's for personal reasons, and he doesn't wish to share his personal reasons with myself. So he didn't give us an opportunity even to have an exit interview, because then I requested him to come to the office so that we can have an exit interview with him. He was not willing to do so. Unfortunately, I couldn't force him to have an interview with an exit interview with us. But that's how he left. He said it's for personal reasons. And to date, he still hasn't informed me of what were the personal reasons that made him to leave. So we just had to accept it, because this is his personal choice. There is no law that says we can force him to stay with us if he's willing to leave. He made a choice, so we had to let him go, unfortunately.
There was a question about the interns that we had previously appointed. Yes, we had a number of interns, and we retained 11 of those interns, because we retain interns as and when we have vacant positions, entry-level positions. So we're able to retain 11 of them. And it is just unfortunate that due to budget cuts on the compensation of employees, we haven't been able to increase our capacity. That's why we're saying probably there's a need for the National Treasury to look at our budget to correct the baseline, because it seems that the baseline is what needs to be corrected. As the CFO indicated, that since the establishment of this office, there was never a deliberate allocation towards the establishment of this institution. But money has always been allocated commensurate to the number of investigators that we have. So if when you check from the beginning of this institution, you divide the amount that was allocated by the number of people that we have. More or less, it works out to the capacity that we had to appoint, but there was never a deliberate attempt to allocate money for either leases or office rentals or things like procurement of machinery. So we had to tap from whatever budget comes through and then use that to make sure that we run a fully established institution. I think that covers the questions, Titi, that I had to respond to. And the CFO will deal with the issue of all the matters. Whether we've appointed, yes, we have appointed additional people internally, two attorneys to assist us to try and curtail the number of investigations that number of matters that we outsourcing to external parties. However, as I said, with the budget cut, I was just talking to HR yesterday to say we need to find a way of getting two other people to assist us, probably at a more senior level than we have, so that we can reduce the number of external people that we're using. But it's something that we're considering budget allowing, but with the current cut of the budget, it is really, really difficult, because we have now, it's like borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. That's how we're fixing now. That's how we're filling positions. When somebody lives in that area, we take the money and fill a position in another area, which is not sustainable, because at the end of the day, we're opening a gap somewhere in the process of trying to close another gap in another area. So we will call it, it's something that is on the cards that we are considering, because we believe it will help us to reduce our legal fees as well. Thank you very much. May I hand over to the CFO to deal with the finance related questions? Thank you.
Yes, please.
Thank you, CEO. The first question relates
Chairperson, before you come, I'm sorry, my apology. Chair, I wanted to make a follow-up on the question of the COO. I don't think the question was about why he left. The question was, what are the plans to bring stability in that office? How have they thought about that in terms of making sure that we have retention, we retain people in that office, not specifically why he left? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. As I indicated earlier, that keeping or making sure that office, there is stability, I think it's also the level and the how we
identify the capacity of the person who should be performing that responsibility, maybe as well the level of that person and the pressure which comes with that particular position, because the operations manager is responsible for making sure that all the investigations and the quality and the targets and as well the support which is supposed to be provided to that particular, to the institution, especially the core part of the institution, because the administration part of the institution, that one, the CFO and the CEO will be able to run with it. But then I must indicate, Honorable Member, that currently we are having the acting COO who has a lot of background in auditing and who has devised a new model to deal with the investigations of the institution. If the chairperson allows, I'll allow her to, Ms. Mambabulu, to just take the committee members into that new model, which as well, Honorable Member, we were only focusing on the COO being a legally qualified person, but then the reality now is that you need a person who will have various skills, capabilities to deal with the issue of that particular office of the COO. And I think once we have a person who will be able to deal with all the pressures and be able to know that actually his or her responsibility is one of the key ones, because it deals with the mandate of the institution and it cuts across and how each investigation a branch or support is taken care of. So I'll give the CFO to respond, and then we'll allow the acting COO to just take the members through that, which is very short, and which will show the members as well that how we would make sure that there is no area of the institution which will, or any province or any office which is conducting an investigation. So that investigation will not depend on a particular section, but then it will be the PPSA investigation. Over to you, CFO.
Thank you, PP, and good afternoon once more, Chairperson and Honorable Members. The first issue relates to consultants in relation to the clean audit outcome, which we have obtained for 2 years in a row. I must indicate that in the past, our internal audit was outsourced, but since 2019-20, we have insourced, as the PP indicated. We now have an in-house senior manager and two internal auditors in that unit, and they are the ones performing the function of all internal audits within the PPSA. I must also confirm that as PPSA, we compile our own financial statements, we compile our own performance information for reporting purposes quarterly and also at the end of the financial year. We only make use of consultants in relation to post-employment benefits for our financial statements on we're using internal resources in that for the calculation of the post-employment benefits. Those are actuaries, those are expertise which we do not have internally, and they're not accounting related. That's just but one transaction where we rely on external service providers for calculation, but compilation, review of financial statements and performance information are done internally by our own employees. In terms of irregular expenditure, I must indicate that the issue of Bowman, it was two legal firms, including Bowman, that we incurred irregular expenditure of 22.2 million. As the PP indicated, this emanated from 2015, when these two firms were appointed to deal with all litigation matters at that time. However, when they were appointed, on a limit of 500,000 per firm using request for quotation system.
Unfortunately, the matters that they dealt with, they exceeded the 500,000. As a result, we had to report everything above 500,000 as irregular expenditure. These two matters, they served at the Financial Misconduct Committee. We presented the facts to National Treasury, and last year we were provided with approval to condone. I must indicate that though they were appointed in 2015, but the matters they dealt with, they ran over a period of time, I think up until 2017-18 financial year, hence the 22 million amongst the two legal firms. The next issue relates to the going concern without a bailout
So you are saying two firms were appointed over a period of time. Is Bowman and which firm?
It's Adams and Adams. The second one is Adams and Adams.
So there was no firm appointed from the previous to disadvantaged?
Yes, Chairperson, unfortunately, in that period. However, at the moment, we have a list or a panel of various firms which include the historically disadvantaged ones.
Can you, I am not really, can you maybe in writing, can you be much more detailed about this regular expenditure as it relates to the two firms? How that 500,000 was breached? Can we have a much more detailed report around that?
We will do that, Chairperson. I think it's, hence I said we do have Advocate Foree was one of the legal managers or EM responsible for that. It was a 2015 matter. So we will do that and give all the details and why that happened. But then to correct that, as the CFO say, we immediately appointed 2016-17, we immediately appointed, actually we were using the IEC panel of attorneys. Thereafter, we appointed our own panel of attorneys to deal exactly with that issue. But we will provide the portfolio committee with the details.
Okay. So which means that 2014, 2015, there was no panel of attorneys?
Until 2016, Chairperson, yes. We only started using the panel of attorneys. We then entered into an arrangement with IEC. I joined 2016 October. 2017, we then used the panel of attorneys until such time we appointed our own.
Maybe in the
report,
yes, maybe in the report, can you detail if there was no panel, how firms or attorneys were appointed before then? I think maybe Mr. Foree can detail that.
Okay, thank you.
Chairperson, before you close that matter, can I also come in on the same issue of Adams and Bowman? I hear that the issue was condoned. Maybe in that report, can we also be given information, the reasons that made them to be the office to condone, that matter to be condoned? Because I'm also thinking of the 22 million, which has been, initially it was supposed to be 500,000. How did we reach to that point? I think these are the issues that we need to follow up in terms of the irregular expenditure. Chairperson, we have to deal with that issue in a manner that if we get some of the money, or if it's possible, we must get that money back. Too much, that money is a lot, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next matter relates to the going concern without the bailout by the Department of Justice. The assessment on going concern is a continuous assessment which we do at the end of each financial year as we prepare our statements. So looking or forecasting the next 12 months from the 1st of April or at the end of the financial year when we prepare the financial statements, we could confirm that all our assets are enough to cover any financial obligations that were going to be due in the current financial year, taking into account also the bailout that we had received. But maybe removing the accounting definition of the whole thing into this, as per the question that you have posed, indeed, as indicated in my presentation earlier, that we continue to rely on the Department of Justice for financial support. Hence, we have engaged them as well as Natural Treasury for them to consider correcting our baseline in the next three financial years. And we indicated that there are talks still underway. We are yet to receive response in regards to that. Other than that, because we have a standing or an indicative baseline or budget for the next 3 years, we can say we are still a going concern. However, there will be limitations in how we do business, meaning some of the operational matters will suffocate because we are underfunded. The next issue relates to fruitless and wasteful expenditure as a result of a legal firm that did not appear in court on our behalf. We have fully recovered that amount, it's about 100,000. So that amount was fully recovered from one of the outstanding invoices that the firm had presented on a different matter that they had dealt or that they had handled on our behalf. Further to that, we have terminated the services of that firm and have reported them to the relevant body that handles conduct of attorneys and advocates. Fruitless expenditure in relation to missed flights. The matter is currently pending at the Financial Misconduct Committee. The employees concerned were requested for their details around the matter, what transpired, and we assessed their responses and requested further information. That matter should be concluded before the end of the third quarter. Thank you, Chair. I think those were all the questions I needed to respond to.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the firm of attorneys is not Bowman. It's the name CFO. Yeah, it's not Bowman, but it's a different firm, Chairperson. We will just tell you what is the name of the firm. Advocate Van der Merwe, can you just in short tell us about the status of our amendment?
Thank you, PP. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, PP, DPP, CEO and colleagues. Yes, the focus area of the amendment of the Public Protector Act is twofold. One is the fiscal instruments and statutory authority that's required for the turnaround strategy and the cost recovery model that we've engaged National Treasury on, and we've made a submission of a concept paper with draft amendments to both National Treasury and the Department of Justice. And we have been referred by them to have the reviews that are on similar institutions that are that the Department of Justice is also reviewing their legislation. So that is on the table at Justice. Then there is a comprehensive review of the Public Protector Act. It's a process that actually was started by the current Public Protector when we initially made submissions to the then Minister of Justice in 2018. But that process was then overtaken by the turnaround strategy and the cost recovery model. And it was after that revised to conduct a comprehensive review of the Public Protector Act. We have draft amendments, but we've identified other areas in terms of search and seizure, other areas of the Public Protector Act, and learning from the court judgments where we are aligning it to the Constitution and the principles emphasized by the courts. And there's a reference group currently that is established under the direction of the Deputy Public Protector that are consulting internally now with the view of identifying the additional areas of amendment of the Public Protector Act, which we will then submit to the executive authority, our leadership, within the next hopefully month or weeks, where after that will also be shared with the Department of Justice to consider while they are including us in their legislative program on the cost recovery issue, then the whole review of the Public Protector Act will also be included in the legislative program. And we are in consultation with the state law advisors at the Department of Justice on those issues, Chair and PP. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the security CEO, you've missed it. I think you can deal with that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, PP. Thank you, Chairperson. I have forgotten to respond to this one. We still do not have sufficient security in our offices. Of the 12, of all the offices that we have, 17 offices across the provinces, on 12 of them, we have no warm bodies as security at all. On 5 of those offices, we're relying on the landlord because at least the landlord has security in the form of warm bodies, but we have videofied all the offices. So that's the only security measure. Hence, in the bid to the National Treasury, we have also raised this as one of the areas that we need to cover because it's important for us to provide security to our people, given the type of work that they do. So we have made a request to the National Treasury, and we're hoping that this will come as part of the correction then of the baseline allocation by the National Treasury. But so far, the security is definitely not adequate in our offices. In the provinces, it's only head office that has warm bodies where we can say we do have security. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, PP.
Thank you. Yes, finally, Ms. Mamabun, in short.
Just a follow-up. Just a follow-up. In line with the Concord judgment, the Inkandla judgment, you might not have security in terms of warm bodies. Maybe you might not want to respond to the question on a virtual platform or publicly, but are you satisfied with the security of documents? If you would want to respond in writing, that will be fine.
We will respond in writing, Chairperson, but we are at a very advanced stage on that process. We've got a senior manager security who's working very closely with the state security agency on the issue of how we comply to MIS, the minimum security standards document. So we will provide the portfolio committee with the processes within the institution on how we secure any information and documents relevant to our work.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Ms. Mamabulo, just 2 minutes and we hand over back to the Chairperson.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members, PP, DPP and colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity, PP. I'll just touch on the basis. I'm not going to repeat what was already presented in terms of the year-to-date glance. I'll just talk to now the current financial year. At the moment, in terms of responding to the capacity of the investigation branches, we currently have 134 investigators with an average caseload of 14 files per investigator. And as at the end of quarter two, we have 1,936 caseload for the entire institution. So what we have done as a collective was to remodel the investigation model into a projectizing method or methodology, which seeks to ensure that we have equal distribution of work proportionately throughout the institution. So we are now speaking, the buzzwords are integration, the buzzwords are national competency, regardless of where the matter was lodged. So currently, the remodeling talks to ensuring that we have a central suppository where all matters will be allocated, and colleagues from the different provinces as well as the head office will be working on their matters as a collective. So that is the kind of model, in short, PPS, I summarize the model. And then that model then seeks to also develop our colleagues in terms of people development, because there will be an element of peer-to-peer review. There will be an element of on-the-job training. There will be an element of working with different colleagues where we support each other. We hold each other accountable for the caseload of the institution. So we are then moving away from the model of working as an investigator with your own matters and your own files, but we are collaborating. And then we also have different platforms for technical consultation at any given point in the methodology. I'm not going to take through the committee through the operational model. I was just saying on a high level, it is a projectizing model which seeks to deal with the entire caseload throughout the organization. And that is where we are going. It is in motion. We have done consultations and the strategy is now at implementation phase. We will be able to give more details when we come back to this platform, or even better, maybe put together a submission to the portfolio committee just to measure the output in terms of the implementation. Thank you very much, Pipi.
Thank you. So that, Honorable Jelle, will also then try to bring stability in the office of the COO. We hope that that new model will remove a lot of pressure, or the pressurized way of doing investigations, because I must indicate that we put a lot of pressure on our teams that we should not be accused of unduly delaying to investigate matters, since that is our core mandate. So we shouldn't be then be accused of also delaying to finalize matters. So possibly the pressure we put as PP and DPP upon the investigation team, that might also contribute, but maybe this projectizing and the new model will help that as a collective, the team deals with all the work. And I hope that that will bring stability within the institution, because that new model, we've approved it as leadership of the institution, where I sit, DPP, the CEO, CFO, and the acting COO. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, PP, DPP, and to your team. I think in the new year, it will be important to do justice to that model, where we will schedule a detailed presentation to be made to us, because that is at the core of your mandate as the Office of the Public Protector. So I think it would be important that we receive a much more detailed presentation, not a 2 minute one, so that we can engage with the model in much more detail. I think, PP, you would have heard when we were engaging with the Office of the Chief Justice, particularly around the issue of recruiting people with disabilities. We have referred them to your office because they are saying that they are struggling to recruit, to get people who are living with disabilities. And we said to them, but the public protector has been able to exceed the national requirements. The public protector is sitting at 2.6. And those are part of what we think are good models that should be shared within the public sector or within the state, because the challenge we have with government or within the state is that you have serious pockets of excellence and the other serious pockets of the opposite, but they don't talk to each other. But we are pleased that you are in a sustainable way achieving and continue to achieve on your targets. You had 72%, you moved to 79%, you are now at 83%, which is what we are really propagating, that there has to be a strong correlation between a clean audit and the performance, because we don't want a situation where we have things that make us feel good. We have statistics that are good to ourselves and have no impact on our people. And so it's good to, the audit opinion should be reflected on the performance, and the performance, we must see it changing the lives of our people. We must see it reflecting the person you are talking about in your introduction, where the intervention of the Office of the Public Protector really brought justice to that person, where an injustice was done, a house was bulldozed, a house was rebuilt, now people are happy. But I think it will also be important that this issue of ensuring that in-house complaints units are really taken up by departments, because the main aim is to ensure that we build a responsive state, a responsive government, where people don't have to pay legal fees or to incur serious legal fees just to be served. And so it's one of the issues that we think that we would be really encouraging that as Parliament, government departments pursue that. And with the assistance of the Office of the Public Protector, we ensure that we capacitate the state. And we do appreciate the fact that you have started insourcing, especially the internal audit unit, which is showing in how you are able to achieve good results, even in terms of better audits, being able to deal promptly with issues of irregular expenditure. I think that is really, it's highly welcome. We are really pleased that you have been able to sustain the audit opinion, because there is no point in being a one-day wonder where you get an audit opinion once in every 10 years. So good governance needs to be sustainable. And we think that you have to now start competing against your own results. We don't expect any drop from this clean audit. And that clean audit must go hand in hand with good performance. And that good performance must be felt by the people on the ground. It's good to have reports that can be read by academics and by analysts. It's good. It also improves the theory of knowledge, but it will be much more better if those good results are felt by the citizens. So I think you should continue doing that work. Thank you very much for coming today with your team, the Deputy Public Protector, the CEO, and the rest of the team. Continue with the hard work. And we know that at the core of your work is also your investigators, whom you have said that they are overworked. Seriously think about wellness programs, because we don't want also people who will live and eat in order to die. And thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleagues. Thank you very much, Public Protector. Let's adjourn until 2 o'clock to receive a report from the South African Human Rights Commission.
Yes, I was about to complain already that since 9 o'clock we have not yet went to lunch.
Recording stopped.
Okay, thank you.